Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, and this is a listener support campaign special. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before the listener support campaign, I ask listeners to email me with programs that they would like to get a listen to one episode on the podcast. We have so many programs we would like to do, but many very popular, very well-beloved old programs with a lot of episodes in existence just take quite a while to play all the way through, and we only have 6 slots available. At this point, actually, plans are pretty firmly in place for 5 of those 6 slots for the next couple of years. Still, there are some great series we'd like to at least bring you a taste of what we hope to bring you down the road. So I ask listeners to email me some of their choices, and we're going to do 3 of them. I want to, first of all, in advance, thank everyone who sent in their request. We couldn't choose everyone's request, but hopefully we will satisfy quite a few of you. Of course, this is a listener support podcast, so I do want to encourage you. You can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. And all donations of $7 or more receive access to our premium site. Plus, we have a lot of great specials available for those who give a donation of $20 or more. You'll receive a copy of one of 4 ebooks, included All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, plus your choice of one of my three superhero comedy books, and one other thank you gift. Among the options, we'll be glad to send you your choice of Nero Wolfe or Agatha Christie audiobook for any donation of $100 or more. And we have quite a few other options available. From $20 up, you can view them all at support.greatdetectives.net. And I had a couple of emails about this. One from Jonathan, actually before I even made an announcement. And then I received an email for Timothy, who writes, "I would like to request the radio program that started my interest in old-time radio, Rocky Jordan." Okay, so he is not a traditional detective, but I remember you've mentioned playing the show sometime in the future, and just to listen to any episode will make anyone agree he fits into the hard-boiled detective category, even in faraway Egypt, written in a time when many had no idea what such a place like downtown Cairo was like. I dream of one day walking the streets looking for the tambourine. Thank you for all your work providing background information on the episodes you present. My favorites are Johnny Dollar, Pat Novak, and Jeff Regan." Thanks again. And we'll be glad to grant that request. And a little background on Rocky Jordan. Rocky Jordan actually began over the radio as A Man Named Jordan. The series aired during World War II and was set in Istanbul rather than Cairo. In many ways, the series has got an almost Casablanca feel to it. You have an American cafe owner living in Cairo, unable to go home due to some undisclosed trouble, and stumbling into one amazing adventure after another. For all but the last season of the series run, the star of the program was Jack Moyles, who we hear on the lineup as Sergeant Carger. And really, Moyles' career was mostly a series of character roles. This is his most famous starring role, and he does quite well in that part. So for today's episode of Rocky Jordan, I've chosen the next episode I haven't listened to in that series. So here from June the 12th of 1949 is The Man from Damascus.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Man from Damascus.
Damascus, capital of Syria. Population, 300,000 or so. They say it's the oldest city in the world that people still live in. I wouldn't know. But I do know there's a street in Damascus named the Street Called Straight. And I also know I once met a man from Damascus. And he was as twisted as they come. But back to a hot Wednesday afternoon. Chris was at the bar serving up some arak. I was standing at the front of the cafe looking out into the Cairo streets. That's when an old man dressed in a boy's postal uniform and riding a bicycle stopped in front of the tambourine. When he came in, he was carrying a wet envelope in his hand.
I have for the Mr. Jordan one special delivery letter. Would the Mr. Jordan sign his name on this line?
The Mr. Jordan would?
I thank the Mr. Jordan.
Here you are, Pop. Buy yourself an ice cube.
Muta Shakir. Muta Shakir, then.
It was a white envelope with some dirty finger smudges and a Cairo postmark. There was no return address. I looked at it for a moment, then tore it open. The first thing I saw, flat and crisp, was a pack of Egyptian pound notes. And I did a quick tabulation. 1,000 Egyptian pounds, 5,000 American dollars. And clipped to the money was a short note. Partial payment for services to be rendered, 1,000 pounds. I'm waiting for you at 16 Sharia El Nazar. 7 o'clock this evening will be fine. And it was signed, The Man from Damascus. Well, I don't take easily to somebody's bidding. If someone wants to see me, he comes to me. So I put the money in the safe, but figured that wasn't the end of The Man from Damascus. Exactly 7 o'clock that evening, I knew I had figured right.
Rocky?
Hmm? What is it, Chris?
Fellow to see you.
Where?
He's in your office. I tried to stop him, but he
was... Oh, that's all right. I'm sort of expecting him.
Mean-looking guy. Want me to come with you?
No, I'll handle it. Take over the till, will you?
Sure, Rock.
Hello, Jordan.
Make yourself at home.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Pretty good booze.
Too rich for your taste, buddy. Put it down.
All right. You know, it's funny. Figured you differently. Everybody in town says you're a right guy.
Maybe you've been talking to the wrong people. What do you want?
You.
You have been talking to the wrong people. I'm not for sale.
That 1,000 pounds is just the start, pal. There's more where that come from.
And there always is.
Ah, come on, big shot. Button up your shirt. It's 7 o'clock. You got appointment.
I can't make it.
That's a big mistake.
Your money's in the safe. You can have it back.
That is not my instructions.
Oh, so you're just a leg man.
Something like that. You and me, we're working for the same man.
All right, buddy, you're through talking. There's the door.
Get away from the door, Jordan, or I'll pin you to the wall. 7-inch blade, Jordan. Damascus steel. Got it?
I got it. All right, put the knife away. You'll cut your hand. I'll come with you if your boss wants to see me that badly. I wasn't going to argue with a 7-inch double-edged blade, especially the way that monkey was waving it in the air. Well, we left the tambourine, climbed into his car, and drove through the Cairo streets, out one of the city gates. We ended up in front of a place called the House of Sand. It should have been called the Pile of Scrap, because that's what it looked like. But the knife man said it was a hotel. 2 minutes later, my pal knocked on the door of room 12.
Who is there?
Jordan. He's come for the rest of the dough.
You're taking a lot for granted, Buster.
Quiet, you.
All right, you may let him come in.
Go on in, Jordan, and meet your new boss.
I walked inside. My pal with a knife shut the door behind me and stayed outside. Then I saw him. A man from Damascus. He was tall and big, but I couldn't tell what he looked like. His whole face was wrapped in bandages. And he reminded me of those pictures I once saw of the invisible man.
Hello, Mr. Jordan. Nice of you to come. Sit down.
I'll take it standing.
Well, it's good to meet again. Is it not, Mr. Jordan?
Again?
You do not remember? But you should. Damascus, 1939. Well, maybe it's my new appearance. I had a face then.
What do you got now?
Let's talk about Damascus.
All right.
You wish a drink?
No, I just gave it up.
Mr. Jordan, you wronged me in Damascus.
I did?
Yes, you wronged me most severely. So severely that I've never forgotten. And I said to myself that someday I would come for you. Well, I am here.
Welcome to Cairo.
Jordan, I'm not just talking for pleasure.
You sure you got the right guy?
And do not try to tell me you do not remember. You are the right man and you know it. But you are fortunate, Mr. Jordan.
Yeah, how's that figure?
I'm going to give you a chance to erase our difference. And make a little money besides. You see, there's someone in Cairo that I want even more than you.
So how do I figure?
You are going to bring him to me. His name is Alex Zarko.
Zarko, huh? It's a pretty big order.
I know, but I think you can do it.
The police have had a dragnet out for 2 weeks trying to track him down.
And I want to get to him before they do. I think you can bring him to me. You know Cairo better than any man I know of. You know where men like Zarko would hide and how to get to him.
Sorry, friend. You've got the wrong guy.
Jordan, listen to me. I would find him myself if I could. I just do not know Cairo. And I cannot go wandering around like this. I'm giving you a chance to square a dirty deal and make a little money on the side. I will double that £1,000 and call off our little difference.
What have you got against Zarko?
He took something from me.
What?
My face.
Oh.
I want to find him, Jordan. I must. Do not know what it is to feel that you can never walk the streets again without a covering on the thing you once called a face. Well, what about it, Mr. Jordan?
No deal. You got a private vendetta with Zarko. Keep it that way. Yeah, there's your £1,000 back. Buy yourself another boy. I walked out of the House of Sand, and the knife man was gone. I found a taxi and headed back for the Tambourine. Alex Zarko. Yeah, an all-around no-good guy. The Egyptian police wanted him on an attempted assassination, espionage work, with an assorted killing or two thrown in. The police had all the roads covered, the trains and the flights out of the city. They figured they had him bottled up pretty well, and it was just a matter of time before they bundled him. Well, back at the Tambourine, I drew myself a beer, found a back table, and did some thinking about the man in the bandages in the city of Damascus.
What's up, Ralph?
Oh, nothing, Chris. Just thinking. Say, did you ever hear me talk about Damascus?
Damascus?
Yeah. Spent 9 months there once working for an oil company.
No, I don't remember you saying anything about it. Why?
Nothing. Just trying to bring back a little memory. Drop it. It doesn't matter.
Sure, I'll get back to...
Excuse me, gentlemen. You are Mr. Jordan?
That's right.
May I talk with you, please? It will take but a moment.
All right, Chris. I'll talk to you later.
Sure, Rocky.
Sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. I did not wish to trouble you, but I found that I had no other course. My name is Sandra Marr, and I'm from Damascus in Syria.
You're traveling, and Cairo's on the grand tour.
This is not a trip for pleasure. I'm looking for someone.
If his name is Alex Zarko, you got lots of company.
No, his name is not Alex Zarko. It is Paul Marr, and he is my husband.
Paul Marr? I don't know anyone by that name.
You may not know him by his name, Mr. Jordan, but I'm positive that you have met him.
And how do you figure that?
Paul said he had some business in Cairo. He left Damascus 4 days ago with a man whose name I do not know, but he was the same man who left the Tambourine with you earlier tonight. It is my belief that he took you to see Paul.
Oh, I get it.
I tried, but I was not able to follow you through the streets of Cairo, so I've waited outside your cafe till you returned. I must see Paul. Would you take me to him?
Nope.
Would you tell me then where he is? Mr. Jordan, Paul's business, as he calls it, it is the trouble. Some terrible sort of trouble, I know.
Oh, you're right there.
He's a fine man, Mr. Jordan. A wonderful man, but things have not gone well since his face. He's in trouble, and I've got to help him.
He's got a revenge on, lady, with a guy named Zarko and me. There's nothing fine about that.
Revenge? Paul? Oh, no, it must be something else. He's not that kind of man.
Well, then you don't know him very well.
It is true. We have not been married for long.
Uh-huh. Look, why don't you just go back to Damascus and forget it? You're in for trouble here. Something's going to happen.
Where is Paul, Mr. Jordan?
A place called the House of Sand. Out of the city, through the gate of the Bar El Nasser. Taxi will take you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Jordan. I shall not forget the help you've given me.
She walked out of the tambourine, and I hoped that that'd be the last I'd see of her and the man from Damascus and Alex Zargo. How vain can your hopes be sometimes? Well, we rolled the last on-the-cuff customer out of the tam about 1:15 in the morning. Chris threw the lock on the front door, and I doused the lights.
I'll just scoot out the back way, Rock.
Oh, all right, Chris. Night.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah. Rocky, look out! Find the garbage cans, quick!
Vengeance, Jordan! Vengeance!
Rocky.
You hear me, Jordan?
Quiet, Chris.
Well, if you do and you are not dead, then I will come for you again!
You are listening to The Man from Damascus, an adventure with Rocky Jordan. Remember that 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon is the new time for Rocky Jordan, so join us each Sunday at 5. And plan to tune in 30 minutes earlier to hear Call the Police at 4:30, so you will have a full hour of excitement and action. And now we take you back to Cairo for another adventure with Rocky Jordan, the man from Damascus.
Well, after the man from Damascus threw those slugs at me, I took out after him, chasing him through the darkened streets. But it's easy to lose someone in the winding Cairo streets, and that's just what I did. I got back to the Cafe Tambourine about 45 minutes later, and Chris wasn't there alone. Captain Sam Sabaya, Cairo Police, was there, too, waiting for me.
Well, Jordan, so you've returned.
Oh, hiya, Sam. What brings you here this time of night?
I phoned him, Rock. I told him. I thought you'd be better.
All right, Chris. See you tomorrow.
Sure. Good night, Captain.
Good night. Well, Jordan, I'm waiting.
Waiting? For what, Sam?
For you to tell me what this is all about.
There's nothing to say.
Jordan, the man who shot at you from the alley called out vengeance. This much Chris told me. Therefore, I can assume that this man is after you for some hurt he believes you have inflicted upon him.
It's close.
What is this that you have done to him, Jordan?
Beats me, Sam.
Jordan, how can you expect me to believe...
I tell you, Sam, I don't know.
Then I shall let that pass. Jordan, who is this man who shot at you?
I'm afraid that's my business. I'll just handle it my own way.
Jordan!
Oh, stop worrying about it. You got your hands full with Alex Zarko.
Oh, fear not. We will capture Alex Zarko. Tell me, has Zarko something to do with this shooting?
You mean, did he throw those slugs at me? No.
I meant exactly what I said. Does Zarko have anything to do with the shooting?
Maybe.
Oh, Jordan, you are most exasperating.
Oh, just a little trick I picked up in my travels.
Very well, very well. I cannot force you to speak. However, I wish to warn you that if someone else is injured, some innocent party drawn into this private conflict of yours, I shall hold you responsible.
Oh, thanks, Sam. That's swell of you. No one will get hurt, believe me. Except maybe that friend of mine.
For your sake, I hope you are right. I would not wish to use my office, Jordan, to have you expelled from Cairo.
I started out bright and early the next morning to see if I could find the man from Damascus. Stop number one was the House of Sand, room 12. I pounded on the door, no answer. I rattled the doorknob and the door came open. I went in. I could see why no one had bothered to throw the lock. The room was empty. Paul Marr, the man from Damascus, had done a quick checkout. I moved down to the front desk to see if I could get a forwarding address. Sitting in a rocking chair, rolling back and forth, was a wrinkled relic left over from the days of the pharaohs. A chortling sound was coming from her throat, and then I saw why. She was reading a U.S. comic book called The Phantom Menace. Hey, lady, you got a customer.
Oh, young man, you are observing an old lady being devoured by pleasure.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're having fun, but could you give me a minute?
Oh, before the Phantom Menace has captured Brig Braun, thrust him in wire, and is dipping him headfirst into a barrel of pickle brine 100 times.
Very fun.
I'm being consumed with joy.
Well, if you can grab hold of yourself for a minute, you can earn a pound note.
My laughter has suddenly left me.
Oh, fine. Look, I'm trying to get a forwarding address on number 12.
That would be a short, fat man with a bald spot. A seller of fly paper.
That'd be a big man with bandages on his face. A seller of death.
Death comes higher than fly paper. Could you make it 2 pounds?
I could.
Alas, now that I find a fortune at my fingertips, I cannot claim it.
What does that mean?
I do not know where your friend has gone. And indeed, you are not the only one who is seeking him. A young lady came this morning. She said she was his wife.
Where'd she go?
I gave her room 10. She said she would wait to see if her husband returned. If you wish to see her, I can call her.
No. What time did number 12 leave?
6 this morning.
How?
By taxi. I called one.
Do you know the driver?
Do I know him? A kelp, a no good evil dog.
Has he got a name?
Holly Amart. Residence 303 Sharia Shaman. It is worth 2 pounds just to mention his name.
Here. Keep it. And thanks. Go on back to your reading.
I shall once again bathe in ecstasy.
And she did. I left her sitting there, wetting the pages, and looked up Holly Amar. It cost me 2 more pounds to open him up. Then all he could say was that he left Mar off at an all-night dive called the Harem. So that was my next stop. A couple of 100 pounds of fat was pushing a wet rag over the counter in slow motion. A red-headed Englishman, deep in his cups, was throwing darts at a picture of a dame short of clothes. What I was looking at was a guy at the end of the bar tilling a bottle of beer. It was the knife man who had first taken me to see Paul Mar. I moved his way, but he saw me and lit out for the back door. I took out after him, fast, like the super chief on a downgrade. He took me through the backyard, over a fence, across an empty lot. But I put a stop to the marathon with a flying tackle, and we rolled into a mud hole. He reached for his knife, but I kneed him, and the fight started to go out of him. All right, where is he?
Who?
You know who, that Damascus friend of yours, Paul Mar.
How did you know his name?
That doesn't matter. What I want now is his address.
Do not worry, Jordan. He will come to you.
Well, I can't wait. Now give.
My throne, your knee.
The address?
I cannot tell.
You'll try a face full of mud then.
All right, I tell. 1042 Sharia Fakar. A small hotel by the name of Little Nile.
Okay. I'm going to put you on ice at the tambourine. Chris will take care of you till I have a chance to talk to your boss alone. The Little Nile was a termite trap on Sharia Fakar, and Mar was holed up second floor back. I stood in front of his door a few minutes later, listening, trying to catch any sounds from inside. I didn't hear a thing. I tried the doorknob easily. The door was locked. So I took a deep breath, kicked at it, and all the rotten wood gave way. First thing I saw in the darkened room was the figure sitting in a chair across the room facing the door. The second thing I saw were the bandages around his face, so I knew it was Paul Mar. And the third thing I saw was the Italian-made gun in his hand, pointing toward me.
What has kept you so long, Jordan?
Sorry, I didn't know you were waiting.
I would not advance toward me any more steps, Jordan. It is wise. Well, you have come. I had assumed that if I did not kill you last night, you would come to me. It saved me parading my conspicuous appearance through the Cairo streets. So you have found me. But unfortunately, I have the gun.
You're not going to kill me here, Mar. Sabaya knows you're after me. You'll never get out of the city with those bandages.
You may be right, Jordan. Perhaps I will not kill you. My original proposition still holds. Bring Alex Zarko to me and our little difference shall be forgotten.
I've forgotten it already.
Jordan, I want Zarko. I want him more than I want you or anything else. Bring
Mar.
Him to...
Sandra's in town.
Sandra?
Your wife. She's in Cairo looking for you. She's at the House of Sand right now, waiting for you to come back.
No.
I saw her. She came to me to ask about you. You know, she thinks a lot of you. She doesn't believe you're the kind of a guy to have a vendetta on. She doesn't believe you could kill me or Zarco, regardless of what he did to your face.
Stop it, Jordan. Do not unnerve me. And do not attempt to change the subject. I want Zarco even more than you. I will let you go if you help me. Here. I shall show you my good faith by throwing my gun into the corner.
It was a mistake, Mar. You know I can't help you. I told you once already, and that still goes. I'm not butting into a private feud.
But I am, Jordan.
Sam. Well, you get around, don't you?
I know you well enough, Jordan, to realize that you would not allow someone to shoot at you and then forget it. So when you would not tell me who had done it, I knew, too, that if I followed you long enough, you would lead me to him. You always do.
Look, Sam, this is a private thing between Mar and
I myself. I have told you once, Jordan, violence is not a private matter. I will not allow killing if I can help it. And I will not allow you, Jordan, or Mr. Mar to interfere with the police capture of Alex Zarco.
Then you haven't got him yet, huh?
No, but I shall have him in time. Mr. Mar shall not. Mr. Mar, you will please remove the bandages from your face.
What?
I said that you will please remove your bandages.
Better do it. Sam's not kidding.
Very well. Very well, then I shall remove my bandages. I shall step into the light, gentlemen, so that you may see all. So that you may see what was once a face.
I watched Paul Marr unwind the bandages, uncovering first what once was a chin, then the battered skin around the cheeks, the nose, over the forehead. Then I noticed his stare, a peculiar, hard kind of stare. Then I saw where it came from, a left eye that couldn't blink.
There. There you have it. Now you can see why I feel as I do about Alex Zarco.
I am most sorry I had to subject you to this, Mr. Marr. But I still cannot allow a personal revenge to interfere with my execution of the law. It is customary in Cairo in affairs of this nature to use the following procedure. There is a train leaving Cairo for Alexandria in 1 hour and 5 minutes. You will please be on the train.
Sam.
And you, Jordan, shall remain in my custody until Mr. Marr has left the city.
And what about Alex Zarco?
He is and shall remain my problem. You have then 1 hour, Mr. Marr. I will meet you at the Cairo station to make certain you have boarded the train. Now you may put the bandages back on your face.
Well, Sam and I left Paul Marr at the hotel and headed for police headquarters. We didn't talk much about Paul. There wasn't anything to say. I was still trying to figure out in my mind what I could possibly have done to him in Damascus, but nothing came. And seeing him, or what was left of him, stirred no memory. At headquarters, Sam had a few things to do, so did I. I put in a call to the House of Sand and asked for Sandra Marr.
Yes, this is Sandra Marr.
Miss Marr, this is Rocky Jordan.
Who? Oh, how did you know I was here?
Never mind that. There's something I want to tell you.
About Paul?
Sort of. Throw your clothes in a suitcase and go back to Damascus.
Oh, I thought you had some good news for me. I thought you understood I will go no place without Paul.
Well, you're not going to find him in Cairo. The police are moving him out.
Police? What have the police to do with Paul?
Paul will tell you if he wants to. Now, go on. You got a better chance of seeing him again in Damascus.
But, Mr. Jordan...
And see if you can keep him out of trouble, huh? Good luck. Well, that was that. All that remained was to see Paul Marr climb on the train for Alexandria and hope he could straighten himself out. And hope, too, that he and his wife, Sandra, would get together. Well, a little while later, I drove to the train station with Sam, still in police custody. There weren't many people there on the holiday afternoon, but standing near the end of the platform, next to a large sign of the flying red horse that accented his white bandages, was the man we were looking for, Paul Marr. Sam and I walked up to him, and he glared at us through the slits in his wrappings.
Well, Mr. Marr, you will be leaving Cairo in a few moments. If after a year has passed you wish to return to our city, write me a letter explaining your reasons, and I shall see what can be done to make Cairo available to you once more.
Marr nodded, climbed on the train, and it headed out of the city. Sam and I turned and started back to his car. That's when it hit me, and I took off in double time.
Jordan, where are you going?
For a train ride. I think you better come along. I chased down the platform and caught the train. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Sam climb onto the train farther down the line. Then I started through the cars, going from one to another, looking for the man in bandages. I traveled through 4 cars before I finally spotted him. When he saw me, I guess he figured what I had on my mind, because he took off fast, going the other way. But I kept right after him. The train had picked up speed, lurching us from side to side. Then going around a bend, the momentum pinned him momentarily against a seat, and I was on him. His fist started working, and so did mine. We had ourselves a fine little fight there, rolling around the floor of the moving train, till Sam Savaya caught up with us and pulled a gun. That put a quick stop to the fight.
Jordan, you will please explain what the meaning of this is.
Sure. Glad to, Sam. Have him take off his bandages.
But, Jordan, I do not
understand. Have him take off the bandages, and I think you will.
Very well. You will please remove the bandages, Mr. Marr.
Take them off, buddy, or I'll take them off for you. That's your stuff. Now, just a little more. Let Sam see who you really are. Well, there you are, Sam. Not Paul Marr at all, but the guy you've been looking for weeks. The guy who's been trying to escape your dragnet and get out of the city. Meet Alex Zarco. Well, the thing came apart at the seams. It was all an elaborate plan of Zarco's. The police had him trapped in the city, needed a way out. So he got his knife man to dig up Paul Marr in Damascus and bring him to town. Then he had Marr, all wrapped up in bandages, create a fuss like his revenge against me, which was strictly a phony. Nothing too serious, just enough to get himself run out of Cairo. Then Zarco takes his place, wraps himself in the bandages, and starts to leave, almost with a police escort. It would have worked fine, except for one thing. Marr's disfigured face and his left eye that couldn't blink. Zarco couldn't control his, and standing on the platform of the train station, he blinked his eye once. And that was once too often. Well, all that remained was Paul Marr, his face, and Sandra. And later, in Sabaya's office, we got to talking about that.
Jordan, where do you suppose Paul Marr is now?
In the House of Sand. I told him Sandra was there waiting for him.
You realize, of course, that I must send some men to apprehend him.
Yeah.
Why do you suppose he allowed himself to aid Alex Zarco?
Put yourself in his place. Face like his and a lot of desperation. He was working a business deal, getting money any way he could, figuring he'd use the dough in a plastic surgery job. Make him look like a human being again.
Yes, quite so. You understand Ma will have a jail sentence to serve for aiding a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be possible for me to confiscate the money Zarco gave him.
Sure, if you worked on it, you could possibly take the dough from him. That is, if you don't forget that he's got...
Are you suggesting, Jordan, that I deliberately allow myself to forget that a financial arrangement existed between Marr and Zarco?
That's right, sir.
Jordan, I have always suspected you are an unscrupulous man.
Sure I am. Remember the time I tried to sell that Monte Carlo swindler a half interest in the tombs of Memlooks?
Remember? No, I guess I've forgotten. Perhaps I am getting old. My memory is not what it used to be.
Thanks, Sam. See you soon.
It's CBS again at the same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Rocky Jordan, starring Jack Moyles in the title role, is produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music by Richard Arant. Tonight's story by Adrian Jandot and Larry Roman. Life with Luigi will be heard tonight at 8 over most of these stations. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. Well, just a great episode here. I mentioned that for all but the last season, Jack Moyles played the role of Rocky Jordan. The series was canceled in 1950 and returned as a summer replacement in 1951, from June through August, with George Raft starring in the role. And Raft did an audition, and the script he used for the audition was actually The Man from Damascus. Rocky Jordan was so well-beloved that it was one of those series CBS really took a look at bringing back for 5-day-a-week serials. And in the case of Rocky Jordan, it had that background of being on 5 days a week for 2 years from 45 to 47 as a man named Jordan. And in that case, for the revived Rocky Jordan, they had Jack Moyles once again do the audition, though. It didn't quite make it. All right, well, that's that. I did want to also share some of the items we're offering as part of our listener support campaign. For those of you in the U.S. and Canada, we mentioned some of the detectives that we're doing or going to be doing shortly, and we have some classic film options that are available for those in the U.S. and Canada with detectives that we're featuring or will be featuring pretty quickly now. We have the Nick Carter triple feature collecting all three of the great Walter Pidgeon Nick Carter movies, the George Sanders Saint movies, and your choice of The Big Sleep or Murder My Sweet, those two great Philip Marlowe films starring Humphrey Bogart and Dick Powell, respectively. Full details available at support.greatdetectives.net. All right, well, that will do it for now. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Be sure and join us back here on Monday for yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And next Sunday, we will have another one of your special requests. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.